And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to discussing some exciting topics again today. We're talking about Exxon getting booted off of the Dow, and then we discuss the strange and actually very dangerous twist that they turned their business to next. So hang on and tune in.
So, Mariah, the how low the mighty have fallen. It turns out that in the year 2011, not so long ago, back when you were in grade school, kid, the Exxon was worth $400 billion. So Exxon Mobil Corporation, big oil, literally the definition of big oil, huge corporation worth $400 billion in 2011. Now, 9 years later, Exxon is worth $175 billion, which means it's lost $225 billion worth of value. Value of a corporation is an abstract term, but I mean, it relates to what the stock price is worth. And in no small measure, the stock price is down because people have been pushing to divest from ExxonMobil and big oil companies. We've talked a lot about that. But what's happened with between COVID and various kinds of price shocks, the oil industry is really on its knees. And it turns out that over the last few weeks,
jump in. Sorry, Ted. The other thing about the stock price is it's predicated on burning all of their fossil fuel stocks. And at this point, we've declared that they can't do that. So that's another problem there with the stock price. It's hard to make it actually realize its full price because it can't.
Absolutely. And there has been reports of these companies, basically writing off, in quotation marks, writing off assets. That is to say, oil fields that they have purchased but have not yet put any drills into any wells in, right? And they say, okay, we're never going to be able to recover that oil because it's just not going to be profitable. We're going to write off the $20 billion we paid for that patch of land, right? To your point, Mariah. And that goes into, once they start writing off value, the stock price goes down. And that's in large measure why Exxon was dropped from the Standard & Poor's 500 listing. Right. So just to be completely accurate, turns out Exxon was dropped from the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the famous Dow Jones Index, not the S&P 500, but S&P owns the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So in principle, our discussion is correct. There you go. Now you know everything. The Standard & Poor's 500 is a listing of all the companies, or how do I say this? Standard & Poor, two guys, right? Mr. Standard and Mr. Poor. They got together and tried to make a list of what companies fairly represent the stock market, fairly show the American economy, right? And so they have the ability to add and drop companies from that list of 500 stocks as they see fit, especially as companies become less and less important. So, for example, a company that in 1911 might have been making very important saddles for horses and might have been very important to the economy, right? That company becomes less and less important over time as cars come in, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, Mr. Standard and Mr. Poor drop that horse saddle company from the Standard & Poor's 500. Well, the same thing. That's a long and labored analogy, Mariah. I hope that one kind of worked. But the long and short of it is Exxon has been dropped from the S&P 500 because it does not have a significant representation in the economic life of the stock market in the country. And it's a real symbol of the fall of the oil industry to have Exxon bumped out of the S&P 500. And it's a marker of the times. Question is whether or not these companies are going to survive going forward. which brings me to an interesting point. Right? So let's just take it as a given, take my word for it, that much of the oil and gas industry is in decay. And places like the fracking fields in the Marcellus Shale and out of the Permian Basin in Texas and up in the Dakotas, they have to sell that natural gas for at least $45 a barrel. They promised everyone that they would sell that natural gas for $100 a barrel, right, and make $55 a barrel, right? But of course, the cost to produce is $45 a barrel. Right now, the cost of that barrel of oil is $40. So the fracking guys are losing $5 on every barrel of oil they dig. That shows that the whole industry is heading into a really bad time. Now, for climate hawks, that might be a good thing to have these evil actors on the ropes. But as I say, it brings up an interesting question. So forgive me for struggling with all my analogies here. But let me just go back to one that I like to use. Back in the 1890s, 1900s, turn of the century, the railroad industry had a decision to make. Were they going to be railroad people or were they going to be transportation people? And they decided, the railroad guys decided they were going to be railroad people, and the trucking industry came in and took over their said, okay, we're going to be the transportation people, and they took all the business, and the railroads in America atrophied. Similar things can be said about the oil industry. As the need for oil to generate electricity and to drive cars, as that need goes away, these huge corporations need to find something to do, something to become. And it had always been my idea that a company like Exxon would imagine itself as an energy company and say, oh, we know energy. We're committed to energy. We used to make energy with oil, but now we're going to make solar panels and wind turbines because we know how to do this stuff. We're an energy company.
Yeah. And there's precedent for that, right? Statoil became Equinor. I think that's one. It's over in Norway, and they mm-hmm. became Equinor. They transitioned from being one of the leading, I think, oil producers to being one of the leading renewable energy producers. So there's precedent. It's precedent. It can happen.
And I think British Petroleum is trying to do the same thing, right? but here's the twist, Mariah. Here's the twist that I think climate hawks need to be aware of. Somewhere in the cavernous halls of Exxon in the oil industry, these guys look at each other and say, we have a huge infrastructure of chemical plants around the company that are processing oil, you know, raw Texas sweet crude, right, into gasoline and whatnot. These guys look at each other and say, really, if we don't need any more gasoline, what we can really do is to use all this oil and produce the precursor chemicals for making plastic. So in fact, instead of being an energy company, the big oil majors will now think of themselves as plastic companies, providing feedstock to manufacture plastic. That is to say, the straw that ends up in the turtle's nose and the plastic in the headset that you're listening to your iPod with or your iPhone with, right? All that plastic.
Or the Legos. It crushes me because it's the Legos, and my kids love Legos.
Absolutely. And Legos are lovable. Legos we have to preserve to the bitter end, right?
Oh, my goodness.
But it's the industry is trending to this idea that somehow they will use the infrastructure they have to manufacture plastic. Now, of course, The Graduate notwithstanding, where the guy said, get into plastics, right? There's more than enough plastic in the world, and particularly in America. You see there's a backlash against plastics. In my hometown, even during COVID, plastic bags were banned before the COVID. During COVID, you could not carry in your own reusable bag, but now all the supermarkets are required to provide paper bags instead of plastic bags, which, to my mind, is a good thing. But point being that there is a reaction to all this plastic produced in the United States. People don't want it anymore. They don't want the stuff floating around in the rivers and whatnot. And so there's a whole industry that seeks to recycle the plastic, take it away, and make it disappear, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess that's where the next nub of things comes, is that because the oil industry wants to get into the plastics industry. It does not see the United States as a great market because there is a backlash against the use of plastic. They look out and see that the rest of the world is virgin territory to sell plastic bags to. And what they are trying to do right now is to essentially broker trade deals. And the example that's in the New York Times, I think, is a trade deal with Kenya, where Kenya in Africa will become a hub for the distribution of new high-end plastic industry, but at the same time has to accept has to accept essentially unlimited plastic trash from the United States. And it's just one of these things that is so galling that this industry is going to strong arm someplace, you know, basically force a country in Africa to make this economic deal that's just bad, just a terrible exploitation. Mariah, am I crazy?
No, it's galling is the right word. I mean, it's the associates that the United States is talking with, they've banned plastics, right? They don't want plastics there either. They know, I mean, the problems with plastics are real and they're certainly concerning, right? It kills fish, which are the livelihoods for many, many people. Not just fish, but it kills all kinds of marine mm-hmm. lives. Hopefully everyone's heard about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, but that's a real thing, right?
Well, what is that?
Oh my goodness. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of tons of microplastics, which are and bigger, but microplastics are basically plastic never disappears. It just gets smaller and smaller and smaller, but it's still there. It just becomes these tiny little beads that you can't really see. And they are floating around in this this big area of the Pacific Ocean. And they're just killing fish that eat them, that ingest them. It builds up in their stomach. They end up dying. And it's, you know, it's a really big problem for marine life.
This stuff collects there because of the sort of natural flow of the water. I mean, the plastic bag finally gets dumped in the ocean, it tends over the decades to drift into this area, right?
Right. There's an ocean gyre or like sort of current that just kind of keeps spinning it around in the same area. And I think it's 1.6 million square kilometers is how big it covers. And that's an area twice the size of Texas or three times the size of France, to give you, you know, some relative comparison. So it's a massive area, the size of Texas, two times the size of Texas, where this plastic is just sort of spinning, and it's incredibly difficult to collect it, to catch it, to get it out of the ocean. And because of this, the whole world has sort of taken notice, and including these places in Kenya mm-hmm. where we're sort of, you know, asking them, hey, listen, could you not only, we know we're making all of the plastic. We know that, you know, the United States is responsible for a lot of the trash that's being created. But now we want you to take it. We want you to make more of it. And they can't say no to it.
Right. I mean, they are in an economically unenviable position, right? They want the jobs associated with sort of the plastic industry, petrochemical hub. I mean, that's a good thing. But then the devil's bargain is to accept all this, you know, the garbage bags and the stuff that can't go anywhere else. If you read this article in the New York Times, which we'll link to, there's these protestations from the American Petrochemical Association and the American Chemistry Association saying, oh, you know, we need a worldwide plan to deal with plastic waste, right? We must do something with this plastic waste problem. And it just, my head explodes. I don't know what your head does, but it's like the solution is simple, is that we should not be producing so much plastic. We wouldn't have to get rid of so much stuff if we weren't making it, right? Yeah. Especially this single use plastic stuff. And the reason, so I guess part of me, my brain goes to things like, well, if the big oil majors wander off and decide to become plastic companies manufacturing precursor chemicals for plastics, well, at least they're not making CO2 anymore by selling to automobile engines. But it turns out that that's not true, that the petrochemical plants that manufacture what are called the precursor chemicals to make plastic actually produce carbon dioxide comparable to coal plants. So it's bad for the environment no matter what they do, right? I mean, this carbon dioxide emissions, the global warming problem, whether they're making petrochemicals for plastic or refining high test for your car, right? And
well, I'll put a finer point and say, you say it's bad for them no matter what they do, but what they could do is keep it in the ground, right?
Absolutely,
as you said, transition to something else. They want to keep their business open. They want to keep jobs going. Find a better way to do it.
Absolutely. And the corporate power that asks you, I mean, gaslighting is a famous phrase that floats around our country now, right? But there's somehow that we should all stroke our chins and wonder how we're going to deal with this terrible plastic pollution problem, and maybe we can make it all disappear to Kenya, is the wrong statement of the problem. We shouldn't even accept that as a starting point, right? I mean, the problem, as you say, we just leave the gasoline in the ground and leave the oil in the ground, and we avoid both the problems.
Yeah.
Except for Legos. We got to keep Legos.
And keep them off.
We have one small plant that makes Legos.
Can we make them out of porn? I don't know.
So it's an interesting question. It's like, you would think that one thing the federal government would be doing would pour huge amounts of resource dollars into manufacturing some sort of material that is plastic but breaks down, right? That looks like plastic, feels like plastic, gives you all the advantage of plastic, but is not a 10,000-year product, right? Slowly grinding up into, tiny microchips. And I don't know where, but somehow I think that it's like mushrooms. The material in mushrooms is a potential precursor to make that kind of plastic.
Well, and compostable ware has come a long way, right? Now it can hold hot beverages, and, they've done a lot with compostable ware to mimic some of the desirability we want from plastic, but it's not there yet, and it's not, it's much more expensive to buy that kind of stuff, and we still have people propping up the the precursors to the plastic industries, right? So
it's this is a topic that is more of a perspective. We talk about perspective on global warming news. This is sort of giving you some background to help you interpret things as you now see them in the news. When you hear about plastic precursor chemicals as being something that Exxon might be making, or it'll fit in somewhere. You heard it here first on the Climate Minute. What we'll do is we'll put up links to what we talked about so you too can be aware of these arcane trade negotiations about where we're going to send all of our plastic stuff. That'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have an idea of how to make plastics recyclable, send it to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'd love to hear about it. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the modern podcast distribution apps, and so can your friends. Please ask them to listen to the Climate Minute on their iPhones. I want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. It's always great for us. I want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a plan that is both equitable and just, that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.